Accession number 20737, Reel 4.
Sorry.
Okay, then. Bill Millard, end of Reel 3. Bill Millard, Reel 4. So you drove to...
London Docks. And we slept on the docks that night in our vehicles, and they were loaded next morning. Again, I think, I don't quite remember, but they were put onto ships, not landing craft, ships. I used to know the name of it at one time. I think it was the Empire or something. And we sailed out, we got aboard, and we sailed out into the Thames Estuary, and we stopped. And we sat there for a week. And I remember making a joke. We lived on tins of Heinz soup, which were self-igniting. It would warm them up. You pulled the thing and it fizzed and it warmed it up. And I remember making a joke saying, we'll never get away from here because we'll be marooned on a pile of tin cans. We'll never get off. And
so what were conditions like on the ship?
Oh, bit awkward, really, because a lot of I slept in a hammock. That's the first time I ever slept in a hammock, and down in the hold. But we had other duties to do, like, for example, this was stupid. I was given 5 minutes instruction on how to fire a 4.2 gun, you know, five shells. And we had to take turns on this. I mean, all right, it might have worked, but I was in charge of a little group who was supposed to fire this gun if anything happened. But we did. We sat there for a week. And the only thing I can say is I remember that there was a terrible storm at that period, and it destroyed the American Mulberry Harbour and badly damaged the British Mulberry Harbour. In fact, the British used the remains of the American one to repair theirs. And then eventually, I remember it was June 26th, because it was my dad's birthday, and we were all given a little card to fill in and say to send home. And because of my dad's birthday, I wished him a happy birthday, you know, merry happy returns, etc. And they were taken off at that posting, and we sailed that night. Mm-hmm. Now, I remember sailing down... Obviously, we were sailing down the channel, and as we sailed past the white cliffs of Dover in that area, I remember there was a ship burning fiercely. All the whole white cliffs were lit up by this burning ship. And then we sailed on and eventually arrived off the coast of Normandy, and I couldn't tell you what time it was. It probably in the early hours of the morning, let's say the morning.
Do you know whereabouts you landed?
Well, I didn't really, and I didn't know for a long time. But it was in that breakwater of sunken ships. All I can remember is, as we got there, there was one of these huge battleships, Warspite and Elson, whamming these great 16-inch shells over. There were other boats there, cruisers or whatever, firing shells over, because we were still only just beyond the coast, you know, we hadn't really gone very far, because that would be... I'll show you the extract from the war diary in a minute, if you like. And that's to answer your other question.
Yeah, no, sorry, no, I'd rather hear it from you. We've got all the books. Well, so what did you see? I mean, so the Germans were firing...
Oh, well, I don't know. It was just noise. Yeah. And I don't know. There were our planes flying overhead, and it was fairly obvious that we had air superiority. But all I can remember is this awful noise of this crash, crash, crash. And we were on a ship. Now, this ship got inside this breakwater of sunken ships. We were on the left-hand side, that's all I can say, and there was somewhere over to our right, sort of housing and stuff like that. But the thing is, this isn't a little thing. We had to scramble down the side on nets onto landing craft infantry, little ships to take us ashore. Well, it was surprising the number of people who were afraid of scrambling down that net. I mean, I'm not denigrating them anyway. They just didn't want to go. from the shape like that, I'm sorry. So we landed and we went ashore and we went into what had been the remains of some village, and in fact the original road, that it was just a new road coming in. It had been blasted through, I suppose, by tanks, bulldozers and everything like that, and anything in the way had just been shifted. And we settled in there, and I don't know really, except sometime later on that day we had to go back to collect our vehicles, because the vehicles were on the ship, but they had to be lifted off by crane onto landing craft tanks. Then these came in to the beach, dropped the front, and then our vehicles were driven off, and in some cases we had to get behind and push, you know, because they were getting bogged down. I can see this quite clearly, but I'll tell you something else. Remember, when I put my foot on the beach, when I got off the landing craft the first time I got on the beach, I had a completely different attitude. I remember saying to myself, I was quite, not despondent, but I thought, this is it. If this doesn't come off, we've had it. And I knew that a lot of us weren't going to come back anyway. I was much more, see, I'd been 19 before, I was now nearly 24. It's, what, 4 years afterwards. Yeah. That was June, and I was 24 in the September. And I remember feeling quite different about it. Whereas before it had been an adventure and excitement, this wasn't. I knew that this was serious, that we were going into, and a lot of people were going to get killed.
So you spent your first night at the village?
Yeah. Well, first thing we did was dig a slit trench. That's what you do, you dig a slit trench. And we drove our vehicle, our 1500 weight lorry, over the top of it, and we actually slept in the back of it. But as soon as anything, we were bombed every night, mortar bombed, shelled every night from then on, straight in the slit trench underneath the lorry. And I can remember this. You see, this is, it sounds ludicrous, this, but I can remember thinking this. And I was frightened. I'm not going to pretend. People who tell you, see, when stuff is dropping down on you, you're frightened. I don't mean you're sort of screaming with terror or anything. They don't. People don't do that. But they're quiet and they huddle up. And I don't know, I can't remember really. It was just a brief period, but it was enough. The following day we were still in this place, and I remember somebody found a couple of Germans. I think they'd gone looting actually in one of these empty houses, and they'd gone around and found a couple of Germans hiding in the roof, so they took them prisoner. They probably got a medal for it. And they were taken prison, taken away. But again, then we moved on to somewhere else. And I remember with my pal, Staff Sergeant Burns, we went sort of prowling around. We came across a farm, and we went in and introduced her. The people were still there, these people, the farmer and his wife. But inside was the most villainous-looking lot of fellas you've ever seen, French-Canadians. And they looked at us, and we obviously weren't welcome. They were a villainous-looking lot, and I said to Staff Sergeant Byrne after that, I said, "Oh, bloody lad, we're not fighting that lot. I don't like the look of them at all." And anyway, we left there, and we were just finding out where we were and what the place was like. But this is coming back now to what I was telling you. The Canadians landed on Juno Beach, which Gold was the British section, Juno Beach there. And where we landed must have been right on the correct, because the first troops we walked into were these Canadian troops. And there's another fellow riding about on a horse abandoned by, and he said, "Anybody hurt this horse, and by God, I'll bloody kill him, whoever he is." You know, there were people like we weren't, I don't know, you know, odd people, these. You know. But they'd been there since D-Day, of course, the Canadians. But it was right, it must have been on the border of Gold and Juneau, because the extract I got from the war diary says we landed at Coeur d'Alene, which was quite a battle for the Canadians. It went on for a long time, that. So that's all I can tell you, really. And as we, and when we landed, we were put straight into a defensive position because they thought the Germans were going to counterattack and try and drive us out, which was obvious. Anyway, it didn't come off, or it was repelled, and sort of then eventually we were regrouped. And then we moved off somewhere else. But everywhere you went, you dig a slit trench, mm-hmm. and you're on the truck over the top of it.
So were you still 127th Brigade?
Oh, no, 71st Infantry Brigade. This.
You were 71st
Infantry Brigade was way back from when we became the Armoured Division.
Oh, right. That'd so when be. Would that be, sorry? That would be...
Ooh, a couple of years before that, yeah.
Oswestry? No, before Oswestry. Southampton?
Oh, no. Well, Oswestry is back from... Wait a minute, hold on.
Never mind, we'll start later.
It would be 1942, I would say. 1942, yeah.
Right,
because
okay.
that was when the Japanese came into the war, wasn't it? Yep. Yeah, 1942.
Right, okay. So was this when you were doing coastal defence?
Oh no, coastal defence was when we were an infantry division.
Yeah, that was afterwards then.
Yeah, and then in maybe the summer of 1942, we became this armoured division.
Right.
I'm saying summer, I'm going by judging by the weather.
Right.
And we finished up in Scarborough. That happened in Scarborough.
We
became 71st Infantry Brigade in. Sorry, I'm wrong. 42 support group at Scarborough, and then we moved down to a place called Malton, mm-hmm. and that's where we became 71st Infantry Brigade.
Right. That was after you'd done the coastal defence.
Oh yeah. That we were an infantry division right, when we did the coastal defence.
Right. So you've done your first night in France, and how did it proceed from there?
Well, it was just sort of went on like that. That would be August 27th when we landed. That's the day after my dad's birthday.
Sorry, June the 27th?
June. What am I talking about?
That's all right.
June 27th, sorry.
That's all right.
And then I remember there was a fellow, the intelligence officer from the 1st Munsters. I got quite friendly with him, I think, because I was a Munster regiment. And he used to come along every day and come up for information and battle plans and things like that. And he didn't come one day, and I found out that he'd been coming up and down this road regularly, and he'd pulled off to let the vehicle pass and gone over a mine. Killed him.
Yeah.
And the driver as well.
So what was your work at this time?
Keeping... Not much, really. It's surprising it still goes back to what I said before. Not much, really. Moving back and forth, moving about, carting the stuff about with you. And we really weren't... We were preparing to move into the line. This is what I'm really coming to now. We moved... The Scottish divisions had been involved in some fighting. It was called the Scottish Corridor, I think, 15th and 51st. And we took over from the 15th Scottish Division. I remember this quite clearly because we moved into Sher, a village, and then they decided to move out of Sher, the village, and take us out into the countryside. And when we got there, we moved our vehicles into a huge... Well, it wasn't a trench, it began a trench, probably about 4 feet deep and quite wide, probably 10 feet wide. And somebody had been there with a bulldozer digging this thing. I imagine they'd been digging it that day because it looked new to me. And we drove our, what you call an LCV, lorry command vehicle, into this space. And I thought, this is stupid. The Germans have been watching this going on all day. They must know we're here. We're going to get it tonight. Now, this is God's truth. That's what went through my mind, because they must have been idiots if they couldn't have seen us moving in there. and all the vehicles are fairly close together in the field, you know, probably not much bigger than that one over there. So first thing we do, dig a slit trench, run the truck over it. And one of my jobs was to change the codes, what they call the Slidex code. They were changed, and you... Do you want me to tell you about it?
What's the Slidex code,
Tell me. It's about as big as a sheet of foolscap paper, say. And on it are different words which are repeated regularly over and over again. Say, brigade, division, move, attack, and things. It's a general sort of army jargon, you know. And alongside was a strip that you could write different letters on it, and same along the bottom, and move, and move, and you say A-Z, and you follow A-Z like that, and that gave you the word there. B-Q, and you follow B-Q. Well, they had to be changed every day. That meant rubbing off these China graph letters on that strip, rubbing them off on that one, and putting the new one on. And that had to be done at 2 o'clock in the morning, which was 12 o'clock GMT, because it was summertime, our summertime. We're over in France, another hour on, so it's 2 o'clock in the morning. So that was my job, to change these every night, you see, to make sure that a new code was on, because if you didn't change them and something came in... So I'm in my... underneath the truck, in bed. But we didn't get undressed. You don't get undressed and in that yet. You sleep in your clothes. And the brigade major, who'd been on duty, he came off and he said, "Sergeant Millon, LTV, go and change the Slidex codes." This is this major Ashburner I'm telling you about. Can I digress? No, go on, I'll carry on with the tale. So I get out of bed and I go in this LTV. Well, I'm telling you, it's in a hole about 4 feet deep. And the all inside, which includes radio sets and signalers and people like that and all the rest of it, is level with the top of the ground, or just slightly below the top of the ground. Well, no sooner got in, there's a liaison officer with me, Lieutenant Randall from the HLI. He's taken over from the brigade major, you see. He's like doing the night duty bit. Woof! Start coming all these mortar bombs. Well, you don't panic, because you know where they are. They come, and then gradually, you can hear the whine and the noise, and they're gradually coming nearer, working. So I said to Lieutenant Randall, I said, "I think we better get down on the floor and put our steel helmets on. And no jacket on, you know, just..." So I was lying down on my stomach that way, and he was like head to toe, you know, kind of thing. He was lying the other way. And we'd no sooner got down than one landed straight outside on the bank outside, and boom! And I felt just like somebody kicked me in the back. That's all, no pain, nothing like that. Just as somebody's getting a running kick in my back, I thought something had fallen on me. And I'm lying there like this with my head down, and then I noticed that blood running down my arm. And we realised we'd both been wounded. Because he's lying the other way, he got in his backside, you know, in his back of his thigh kind of thing, you know. And because I was facing that way, they'd come over my head and gone onto my shoulder that way. I mean, if we'd been sat up where we were before, we'd have both got it in the body. Yeah. Or if you like, if I'd been a couple of inches higher up, I'd have been got it in the head. This is what I mean about thing luck. It came over my head and into my shoulder, and scooted down my shoulder blade further down. I mean, I wasn't terribly hurt, I wasn't frightened or anything like that. I mean, I'd felt no pain whatsoever. And, of course, when the bombing stops, everybody sort of surfaces again, and the brigade major comes out and signals officer, and, "Are you all right?" "Yes, yes." "Well, we better get you to the casualty clearing station," or something like that. So then the brigade major says to Rosvine, "Take him in my car," and Lieutenant Randall as well. So Rosvine drives us down to the... It's pitch black, I mean, you know. Well, it's night, and I had no idea where it was. I should have done, I suppose, but I had no idea. We get there, and we're unloaded. And this casualty station is a big hole dug in the ground about that height. up 2 feet, something like that. And there are sort of we're lying in there. And God almighty, it started again. I don't. And these bombs or whatever are coming over, and near to us, very near to us, is a battery of guns. And I suppose they're having a shooting at one another, you see. And I can remember Lieutenant Randall, he was a married man, and he pulled sometimes, wasn't it? Might have been another Scotsman, another Scots fellow, anyway. They were actually HMI. It might, no, I think possibly it wasn't Randall, forget that, because I think probably they treated officers in a different section. Mm. Maybe, I don't know.
It was one chap, anyway.
Anyway, he pulled this, and it's a picture of his wife and family, and I know he's praying, he's looking at this, and he's praying. But this is what I keep saying, you're frightened, but I've never seen my life flash before me at all. I don't know. I wonder sometimes if people make things up. Anyway, that's finished, and then from there we were taken down to the coast, actually back onto the beach again. Yeah.
And can I ask you just a little bit more about the casualty clearing station?
Yeah.
What sort of treatment were you getting there? I
mean, nothing. Yeah. Because neither of us were seriously injured. I suppose if we'd been seriously injured, they would probably they'd have done something for us. But
how many staff did they have there? How big was it?
Mm. Well, I don't know. We were just in this hole in the ground. Mm. And a marquee over the top of it, like inside a marquee. And this... It's surprising the details that don't register. Anyway, if I might just go ahead. The next thing, all I can remember is arriving back at the beach in another great big marquee. And there are wounded fellas lying all over the floor. And the fella next to me is practically dead. And I'm telling you this for a reason. He was dying. He was seriously wounded. And they came along and gave him a blood transfusion. And you could see him coming to life again. His yellow turned pink. You could see him. And he started sort of... You could see him come to life again. And that was why in later years, when I became a blood donor, because I was so impressed by what I'd seen there, that I became a blood donor. I was a blood donor for years and years. Years. And there were other fellows around as well. And this doctor came, looked at me and examined me, and he said, send him back. I thought he meant send him back to my unit. So I was quite prepared, you know, to go. What they meant was send him back to England. So the next thing is, I'm on a ship, walking down, getting on another landing craft, and being taken to a hospital ship, and going back to England. And I'm not sure, all of the next thing I remember is... You don't take note of specific things, really. It's finishing up in a hospital in London. Now, this is another thing I was talking about. The flying bombs were coming over all the time. They were going off all over the place. And people, you'd be surprised, they're brilliant. When they came over, you knew one was going to come over. And everything just goes, and the nurses there just sort of carried on. Just doing what they were doing. Nobody screamed, nobody panicked. And the place would shake, you know. But nobody panicked. And all these men that there are wounded have just come out of Normandy. So, anyway, the next thing is, we were only there probably 2 or 3 days, I should think, or a few days. And I finished up on another train, and I was sent to a hospital in Scotland, in Larbert, in Stirling. And there they operated on me. July 4th I was wounded. I remember that because it was US Independence Day. And they operated me on July 14th. I remember that because it was Bastille Day.
So Larbert, is it?
Larbert. Yeah, Larbert, Larbert, Stirlingshire.
Yeah.
And,
So how serious was your injury?
No, not very serious. I say, it, luckily, I was lying on the floor. It entered and it hit the shoulder blade and sort of slid along the shoulder blade and stuck in me further down. So what I had to do is, I still got the piece of shrapnel actually upstairs somewhere.
They took it out?
Yeah, oh yeah, I took it out.
So how long were you in the hospital there?
I don't know.
While.
Perhaps, certainly a week, at least a week, I would think. My sisters came up and to visit me. We went to Edinburgh and had a walk round Edinburgh, and I remember feeling quite shaky, actually. You know, you're wearing hospital blues and things like that. And we were sort of climbing up some stairs and I had to sit down. It's surprising. I think it was more the operation than the wound that took it out of me.
I mean, how did you feel about the care you got in the hospital?
So oh,
you
brilliant.
Them?
Oh,
what was
brilliant.
The hospital ship like?
Well, same again. I mean, see, I was walking wounded. I mean, I was able to walk about if I wanted to. So, as I said, I was more surprised they sent me back. I thought they'd have just slit it open, taken it out, sewn me up and said, right, back to your unit. Now, whether they had more casualties that they can cope with and didn't want, I don't know, but that was what happened.
So, who was on the hospital ship? Was it Queen Alexander's or, you know, who was staffing it? Do you know the name of it?
No.
Okay. Hospital in London, do you know which one?
I did once upon a time, but not now.
Fair enough. It was a good while ago, and you obviously made a complete recovery, haven't you?
Yeah.
So, at Larbert, and then where to then?
Then they sent me back to the training depot, 24th Machine Gun Training Centre at Chester.
Mm-hmm. Right. Were you pleased to go back there?
Not really, no, because after you've been... It's because it's regimental again. It's bloody marching about and commandants doing and running. You know, it's sort of all the stupid stuff you see on the television and pictures of when they're training soldiers.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been living for 5 years. Well, we were on good terms, the officers, men, everybody. There was none of that nonsense about stand to attention and do this and all the rest of it. It's nonsense. That was the only reason why I didn't like Ashburner, because the previous brigade major, Adam Clark Brown from the 43rd Light Infantry, I really liked him and we had a good relationship. I mean, I couldn't say we were friends or anything, but I mean, we had a good relationship. I mean, officers and men didn't, you know what I mean? Although, on one night, I do remember, we went out and we went drinking together. You know, we had a good relationship, that's all I can say. And it was never funny about being an officer and my being a sergeant.
So Chester was a bit different.
Yeah, but going back to this business of just when we were down at Semley, he was promoted G3 and went to division. And we got this Major Ashburner. Now, I think he'd come from a battalion, and he was regimental and stand up and salute and do this and walking round and, what are you doing? You know, that kind of thing. Well, I mean, we hadn't had anything. We knew one another. We trusted one another. We didn't need any of that sort of business. And I don't know. Perhaps my fault as much as his. I didn't attempt to sort of... I just did what I was told, you know.
Bill Millard, end of reel 4.